there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warm up from the Evo. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Joining me in segment number two, we're going to have Tanner Kern aboard. He does great work over at DraftKings. We're going to be chatting with him about what he's all noticed from the first few weeks of the season, some of the things that have been good, bad, and indifferent. Then we're going to be taking a look at what we've all got on this Sunday as well. And I know that he's got some thoughts with regards to some of the, shall we say, bottom teams out there in all of baseball. I do as well. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this baseball Sunday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters CM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, but we had a fun day of baseball on Saturday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The top over team in all of baseball just keeps on hitting. The Baltimore Orioles, they get the job done against the Kansas City Royals by a count of 9-7. For the Orioles, by the way, 13 overs, 5 unders, and just 2 pushes thus far this season. As for Kansas City, to their credit, they did a nice job of being able to get to Corbin Burns and the bullpen. Burns does give up 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings, including a home run going deep. Salvador Perez, he was able to get home run number 6 of the campaign as he had 5 RBI in this one. From there, you did have Danny Colum give up a run in 2 outs out of the bullpen. You had Yoan Ramirez give up 2 runs while getting just a third of an inning. Yennier Cano gives up a run in a third of an inning. But you had from there Keegan Aiken, Mike Bauman, piecemeal together a scoreless inning. Craig Kimbrel has actually looked halfway decent thus far this season. He gets a scoreless inning that gets him a save. And for the Orioles, they go 7 of 16 with men in scoring position. No home runs, they just kept moving the line. As Cole Ragans, he gets 5 outs. He gives up 7 runs, all of which were earned. This for a guy that was towards the top of the odds board coming into the season for the Cy Young Award. On El Zarpa, Nick Anderson, Chris Strain, they're all able to end a scoreless inning. You did have John Schreiber give up a run in an inning, and then you had Anthony Veneziano, hopefully I said that correctly, he gave up an earned run in his inning work, though, to the credit of Matt Sauer, 2 1/3 inning scoreless out of him, but damage was already done by the Orioles. And for the Oakland A's, second straight game as an underdog in which they did not cover the run line. This after they were on a 10-1 surge on covering the run line as an underdog. 6-3, the Cleveland Guardians are able to get to the Oakland A's, and more specifically, Alex Wood, as Wood gives up 4 runs over the course of 5 innings, including a home run going deep. Josh Naylor is having himself a season, 6th home run of the campaign. I know that on social media, people want him extended very, very badly. Austin Adams gives up 2 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Did have Michael Kelly, TJ McFarland, both on his scoreless inning, and Danny Jimenez gets an out of the bullpen. And for the Oakland A's, you did have A pair of home runs in this one. Ryan Noda, home run number one in the campaign. Max Schoman was able to get home run number one in the season as well. Those both come off of Logan Allen, who gives up 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. But from there, Scott Barlow, Hunter Gaddis, Emmanuel Class A, they all lend a scoreless inning. And Nick Sandlin is able to give you a pair of outside the bullpen scoreless as well. For the Cubs and Marlins, they split their doubleheader. For the Marlins, they get the job done in game number one by a count of 3-2 as you had Jesus Luzardo give you a relatively solid start. He gives up 2 runs over the course of 6 innings. Calvin Fauché was able to chip in there 2 scoreless, and then Tanner Scott gets a scoreless 9th. The Marlins do leave 10 men on base, but Brian De La Cruz, he was able to get it going in the 9th inning. He takes Adbert Alzolay deep for home run number 5 of the season. That turns out to be the difference, as the Cubs didn't get great length out of Javier Assad, but he only gives up 1 run in 4 2/3 innings. From there, Yancy Almonte, Mark Leiter Jr. combined for 2 scoreless innings. Luke Little gives you a scoreless inning as well, but Adbert Alzolay tried to come in for a 4-out save, but instead gives up that home run to Brian De La Cruz, and that turned out to be the backbreaker. In game number 2, though, the Cubs are able to get their redemption 5-3. They're able to get the job done in this one. As for the Chicago Cubs, this team has been very much one of the best at being able to generate runs at home all season long, north of 6 runs per game when they are in Wrigley. As Shota Imanaga, he was trying to become the first starter, I believe, in MLB history to have each of his first 4 appearances be scoreless, but does give up 3 runs, 2 of which were earned over the course of 6 innings, including a home run going deep for Miami. Josh Bell, 3rd home run the campaign, and then he actually had a surprisingly good start out of Roderi Munoz, the young gun. He comes in, gives up 2 solo home runs over the course of 5 innings, as going deep off of him was Cody Bellinger, home run number 4 of the campaign, and then the first for Alexander Caniaro. But from there, the bullpen of the Miami Marlins continues to be the bullpen of the Miami Marlins. Anthony Bender gives up 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Brian Hoying gives you 4 outs out of the bullpen scoreless, and Sixto Sanchez scoreless inning. But for the Miami Marlins, they went 1 of 1 with men in scoring position, but they could not get to the bullpen. Hector Neris, a scoreless inning, and Ben Brown was able to supply 2 scoreless of his own. Also out there in the NL Central, the Cincinnati Reds are able to keep up, and they get a 7-5 win over the LA Angels. Patrick Sandoval did not have it in this one. Gives up 5 walks, 7 runs in 4 innings, including a home run going deep for Cincinnati. How about Tyler Stevenson, his 3rd home run in the campaign? That was of the Grand Slam variety with 2 outs, so that was a backbreaker for Los Angeles. From there, the bullpen actually did their part. Jose Suarez, Hunter Strickland, they combined for 3 scoreless innings. Luis Garcia, scoreless inning, and Miguel Sano, don't you know? He's now got a home run for the LA Angels. Takes Graham Ashcraft deep for his first home run of the campaign. And for Ashcraft, this was not a piece of work. This was a piece of Ashcraft. He gives up 5 runs over the course of 5 innings, but Nick Martinez, 3 innings scoreless in long relief before Alexis Diaz closes the door, scoreless inning in the 9th inning. And then you add the Milwaukee Brewers, and our DK Network write-up pick was on the over. This cash is in the top of the 4th inning, and the Brewers get it done 12-5. It was very torn between money line and the over. I should have taken the over because I would have gotten a little bit of positive juice, but hey, you take the winners however you can get them, and for the Brewers, they were winners with Rhys Hoskins and Jackson Chirillo both taking Miles Michaelis deep. Both of them had home run number 4 of the season, and Bryce Turang, his 2nd home run season. That also off of Michaelis, who gives up 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings, and as bad as that was, the bullpen was even worse. Giovanni Gallegos gives up a run while going just 2/3 of an inning out of the bullpen. Zach Thompson, 3 runs surrendered in 2/3 of an inning. Andre Pallante, 3 runs, 2 of which were earned in 3 innings. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, you did have Paul Goldschmidt give you an RBI and a hit in this one, which he has really been struggling, as D.L. Hall has been as well for the crew. He gives up 4 runs in 3 2/3 innings, but bullpen from there was lights out. How about Hobie Milner, Ebner Uribe combined for 3 scoreless innings? Bryce Wilson was able to give you 4 outs out of the bullpen scoreless, and then Taigo Vieira, he was able to get the final inning scoreless as well. So good win for the Brewers, and good win for the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays have really been struggling out there in the bullpen, but they were able to hold the Yankees scoreless 2-0. They win in 10 innings for the Yankees. 13 unders, 7 overs, and a push. So they have been your best under team in all of baseball thus far this season, along with the Seattle Mariners, who they're sitting with 6 overs, 13 unders, and a push. But that's it for the Tampa Bay Rays. You had Zach Eflin be pretty effing good. 6 scoreless innings, and then Phil Maton, Colin Boucher, Jason Adam, Garrett Clevenger all in a scoreless inning as the Yankees go 0-5 with men in scoring position, and they squander what was a very good outing from Nestor Cortez. 7 scoreless innings. From there, Luke Weaver, Clay Holmes, they both land a scoreless inning, but Caleb Ferguson, he allows 2 unearned runs out there in the 10th inning, one of which was actually earned, but that's it for the Tampa Bay Rays. They get some runs up on the board by being able to have a few RBI singles. Jared Calabreo had a double as well. So the Rays, they do find a way to be able to get the job done. And then in terms of that top under team in all baseball, the Seattle Mariners, another under for them on Saturday. They take down the Colorado Rockies 7-0 as the Rockies have now scored 0 or 1 runs in 4 out of their last 5 games. Just absolutely nothing doing for them. And for Dakota Hudson, he lost 4 runs in 4 innings, including a homer going deep for Seattle. Cal Raleigh, 4th home run of the season. From there, you did have 3 runs surrendered in an inning by Victor Vodnik, who has actually been relatively solid in the bullpen, and he's got now a 2.03 ERA. Next two guys that came in have one north of an 11. Tyler Kinley, a scoreless inning, and Anthony Molina, 3 scoreless innings, but for the Rockies, absolutely nothing doing off of Luis Castillo. He gives up 2 hits in 7 scoreless innings. From there, Tyson Miller, Brett DeGuise, they both are able to supply a scoreless inning. So nice, easy winner there for Seattle. And for the Colorado Rockies, they now fall to a whopping 4-16. Still better, though, than the Chicago White Sox. And for the White Sox, yay verily that they put up some runs in the ninth. And this was a very interesting game as the Phillies and Zach Wheeler took a no-hitter into the seventh inning. You would not get any run scoring for the White Sox until the ninth, but they put up a 5 spot in the ninth inning and they load the bases to try to tie it, but nothing doing. The Phillies get the job done by a count of 9-5. For the White Sox, they were averaging 2 runs per game coming into this one, so marked improvement there, but Mike Soroka continues to be banged around like a pinata. 5 runs surrendered in 4 2/3 innings, including a home run to Brandon Marsh, 5th home run of the campaign. From there, you had Dominic Leon give up 2 runs in an inning. Tanner Banks, he got 2 outs, gave up 2 runs. Davey Garcia, though, comes in, he gets a pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless to Mill, a scoreless inning. And for Philadelphia, Zach Wheeler, he was wheeling and dealing. Gives up just 1 hit, 7 1/3 inning, scoreless to Anthony Dominguez. Pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless, but it was Ricardo Pinto who gives up 5 runs in 2/3 of an inning to the White Sox. That's as bad of an outing as it gets. Jose Alvarado has put out the fire from there, gets a final out of the game to be able to get a save. And for the Houston Astros, they're looking to save themselves from a really bad start, but were unable to do so on Saturday. 5-4, they fall to the Washington Nationals. As for Houston, Ronald Blanco continues to be solid for them. He gives up 2 runs over the course of 6 innings, did allow a home run to CJ Abrams, 6th home run season, and then from there, you had Rafael Montero, Brian Abreu, both on his scoreless inning, but Ryan Presley, he slips up in the 9th inning, gives up 2 runs, one of which was earned, and then Seth Martinez in the 10th inning gives up the unearned run that eventually toasts the game. As for the Houston Astros, they were unable to get to the Washington Nationals bullpen late in this one. Tanner Rainey, Kyle Finnegan, both supply a scoreless inning, and for Trevor Williams, actually a really nice start here, gives up 1 run over the course of 6 innings, then they though get to Robert Garcia. Did not get a single out, gave up 2 runs along the way. Hunter Harvey, though, a scoreless inning, and Jordan Weems gives up a run in his inning of work. The Boston Red Sox, they were able to put in that work against the Pittsburgh Pirates. 4-2, Boston is able to get it done as Cutter Crawford lights out in this one. Gives up 1 run over the course of 6 innings, did allow 7 hits, but for the Pirates, unable to do a whole lot with men in scoring position, going just 1-7 there. And Mitch Keller's had a rough start to the season. 4 runs surrendered over the course of 6 innings, including home run going deep for Boston. Masataka Yoshida, his 2nd home run of the campaign. From there, the Pirates get Luis Ortiz to come in the game for 2 scoreless innings. Connor Holderman, a scoreless inning as well. And then you did see Yoli Rodriguez give up a home run in his 2/3 of an inning for the Pirates. Going deep off of him was Connor Joe. He made it go. Home run number 2 of the season, but everyone else pretty spotless as Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, they both supply a scoreless inning, and Greg Weisert is able to give you an out at the bullpen scoreless as well. The LA Dodgers all of a sudden have lost 4 out of their last 5 games. The Mets take them down by a count of 6-4. For the old Metropolitans, this was a relatively solid start, but not a lot of length from Jose Buto. Gives up 2 runs in 4 1/3 innings. Did walk 5, though, although he did punch out 6 from there. Michael Tonkin, he gives up 2 runs in an inning of work, but the back half of the bullpen was able to do their part. Edwin Diaz does walk a pair, but gets a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Drew Smith, Jorge Lopez combined for 2 scoreless innings, and then Reed Garrett was able to give you a scoreless inning as well. As for Starling Marte, it was a parte for Marte. 4th home run of the season, 3-run shot off of Ryan Brazier, which turned out to be the difference. For Gavin Stone, he only allows 2 runs in 3 1/3 innings. Problem was, he walked 5 along the way. Michael Grove was able to come in for a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Ryan Yarbrough, Ryan Brazier, they combined for an inning, and Brazier eventually gives up that home run, but he was only tagged with 1 run. The other 2 went to Ryan Yarbrough, Joe Kelly, Alex Vesia combined for a scoreless inning. Evan Phillips gives up an unearned run in his inning of work. Nick Ramirez gives up nothing in his inning of work, but for the LA Dodgers, 2 of 12 with men in scoring position, stranding 13 men on base. So the offense wasn't able to come up clutch when they needed to, but being able to come up clutch, the Atlanta Braves pitching. They take down the Walker Texas Rangers, this by a count of 5-2. Braves have been one of your top over teams in all baseball thus far this season, but they didn't necessarily give up a whole heck of a lot in this one to be able to oblige for the over, as Charlie Morton, pretty rock solid. 2 runs surrendered over the course of 6 innings. AJ Minter, Rossy Iglesias, Joe Jimenez, they are all able to supply a scoreless inning for the Texas Rangers. Nathan Eovaldi gives up 6 walks, which that tells me something's wrong. He's typically a great command pitcher. Gives up 3 runs in total over the course of 5 1/3 innings. 55 shades of John Gray was in the bullpen, and he gave you 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Austin Pruitt, though, gives up 2 runs in an inning, including a home run to Travis d'Arnaud, home run number 4 of the season and home run number 4 of the week. So they find a way to be able to get it done, and the Toronto Blue Jays, they haven't necessarily been producing a lot of runs as far this season, but they've been able to do just enough to be able to get wins. 5-2, they take down the Padres as they're now 12-9, and you saw Jose Barrios be tremendous. 6 scoreless innings. Genesis Cabrera gives up a run while getting just an out of the bullpen. Eric Swanson goes an inning. He gives up a run as well, but Yimi Garcia, perfect outs of the bullpen scoreless. Jordan Romano was able to give you a scoreless inning as well. Dalton Varsho provided the boom off of a run. Randy Vasquez, his 5th home run of the campaign for Vasquez, gives up 4 runs, but only 1 of which was earned over the course of his 5 innings of work, including that home run. What caused it in was that there was an error early on in the field by Graham Pauly, which is why there are many unearned runs. Johnny Brito from there, 3 scoreless innings, and Yuki Matsui, he was able to hold down the fort. He supplied a scoreless inning as well. Also being able to provide a lot of scoreless innings, the Detroit Tigers and Minnesota Twins, 4-3. The Twins are able to find a way to get this one done, as for Pittsburgh, you had Reese Olson not having it in this one, but it was hurt by the fielding. Javi Baez had an error, Spencer Torkelson had an error, so though Olson gave up 4 runs in 5 innings, 2 of those were unearned. You had from there Joey Wentz, Alex Lang, both combined for 3 scoreless innings, and for the Minnesota Twins, Bailey Ober, very good starter, 6 punch-outs in 6 innings, allows just 1 run. Steven Olkert and Cody Funderburk, they combined for an inning. They both gave up a run apiece, but Cole Sands, Michael Bauman, they combined for a scoreless inning, and Griffin Jacks, get Jacks up for the fact that he was able to give you a scoreless inning. He was able to get that save and this thing to the window. And if you are taking a look at Major League Baseball right now, it has been relatively even, Steven, with regards to the totals. After we saw a big giant binge of overs to begin the season, things have become a little bit underwhelming since then. 45 overs of 47 unders over the last 7 days, so a little bit profitable on the under side of things, and we have been noticing that favorites have been just absolutely dominant. 59 and 35 on the money line over the last 7 days. Overall for the season, favorites hitting at 59%, 183 and 127. The road teams, 164 and 149. That has really been where the dominance has been. And the overs still have a lead on unders, 153 overs to 150 unders. So that's what we're seeing right now in Major League Baseball, and that's what we all got on Saturday. Now let's turn it forward to Sunday and get some early season takeaways from one of our good friends, Sander Kern over at DraftKings. That's up next right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and it is always great to be joined by this man as Tanner Gurren does absolutely tremendous work over at DraftKings, taking a look at so many different things. He is locked in on what we're getting on the NBA front. I know that he is getting psyched up for the NFL draft. Does a little bit on the hockey front as well, but he, much like myself, absolutely loves this great game of baseball. I know that he also is one half of the Ride the Line podcast, and you're able to follow him on Twitter /X at his first and last name, Tanner Gurren. Last name is spelled K-E-R-N, and then an underscore after that. And Tanner, always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Always love joining the show.
Always love having you aboard, Tanner. And as we're doing this, we're about 3.5 weeks through the season thus far. And just what have been some of your biggest takeaways from this MLB season? Because it has been one that has seen its topsy-turviness, to say the least. But I feel like one of the biggest takeaways that I've had is that the bad teams in the league, it feels like they're about as bad as they ever have been. I don't think that there's ever been quite the divide between the haves and the have-nots in the league like we've been seeing this season.
I totally agree with that, Greg. I think we're really seeing the big market teams take over and take all these star players, and then we're seeing these small market teams unable to compete. You know, the Athletics have been great on the run line, but over the course of the season, they're just going to get beat up and beat up. And like even the Boston Red Sox, they're putting a team out there that is not a major league lineup, which is a massive issue. One for me as a Boston Red Sox fan, but just for the game of baseball, right? We're seeing teams that want to spend win, and we're seeing teams that don't fall apart. But my biggest takeaway overall has to be the Cleveland Guardians. They've really surprised me. They've played really well so far this season. One of the best records in baseball right now. They're hitting .252 as a team with a .320 OBP. And this is a team that really doesn't hit a lot of home runs. They put the ball in play. They play the game the right way, and it's really paid off so far this season.
And I think that that's a nice takeaway, and I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that the Guardians are not too much of a home run team, because I just feel like home runs have been a little bit down around the league this far this season. It's been a case where I feel like small ball is being rewarded more so than ever before, and personally, I'm a fan of that myself, but is that something that you've been noticing as well, or do you have a little bit of a different view on what we've gotten here in the beginning part of the season?
Well, the Red Sox are one of the best home run hitting teams in baseball, and it really hasn't converted to wins consistently because they don't play good defense, right? And I think we're seeing that as a general theme of the league, right? Defense has not really been appreciated over the past 5-6 years, I would say, right? We care about home run hitting power. If you can hit home runs and you can hit for power, you're going to be in good shape and you're going to work your way through the minors. But the bottom line is defense still does win games. If you're a team offensively that puts the ball in play and plays really good defense, you're going to win. And we're not seeing that a lot. We're seeing star players that can hit, but not necessarily play defense. And, that's kind of been a theme throughout the league, right? I think the same thing is big market teams are taking over and small market teams are kind of falling to the wayside.
Yeah, but it certainly has been a case where some of these teams have just not been great, to say the least. And Exhibit A is the Chicago White Sox, a bunch that just put out there a pitiful performance over the last few days in general. I just take a look at this team, and as we know, in sports betting, you're betting numbers, you're not betting teams. And is there going to be a buy point on the White Sox? Sure, but I take a look at a spot like we've got for Sunday with Nick Mastrini being about a plus 230, plus 235 underdog against Aaron Nola. And typically, I am a sucker for taking these big plus money underdogs. Did so when the Nationals were taking on the LA Dodgers earlier in the week. This is one that I don't want any part of whatsoever, though, because I don't know if the Chicago White Sox can put up, multiple runs, a run to be able to give them any support whatsoever.
Yeah, and it's sad too with the White Sox, because over the past few years, they've had talented rosters, but this is probably the biggest underperforming group of stars we've ever seen. I mean, not ever seen, but seen recently, right? This team's loaded with some potential. They just don't have it, and now injuries are coming in, and now they don't want to spend money, and it's a big issue. But looking at this game on Sunday, Nick Mastrini's been great, as you were saying. 3.6 ERA, 1.0 whip, but he is 0-1 on the season in his five innings pitch, and that's just because the White Sox don't score a lot of runs. Batting 190 as a team, 38 runs going in. The Phillies have scored 79 runs. You could have the best pitcher in the world on the mound. If your team can't score runs, you go down 1-0, like, you feel like you're in a massive hole. And that's what we've seen with the White Sox. They're also 1-7 on the road. They will be 1-8 on the road after they lose this game. So not a spot I want to bet the White Sox.
Yep. And for the Chicago White Sox, first 19 games of the season, so that's entering into Saturday, they had scored 38 runs, getting outscored by an average of 3.2 runs per game. So they're getting outscored by 1.2 runs per game more than they are actually scoring in games. And that's not taking into account the Saturday butt kicking that we got as well. So, man, I mean, it is just absolutely rough what we're seeing on that front, as we are being joined by Tanner Kern, who does tremendous work over at DraftKings. He is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And Tanner, I know that you're out there in the great state of Massachusetts, and you do have a little bit of fandom running through you with regards to Boston Red Sox. And this is a little bit of a tricky spot because this game is off the board, but Josh Winkowski, he's going to be getting the start for the Boston Red Sox up against Martin Perez of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Obviously, a little bit early to know what we're going to be betting on. We need to get a line set, what have you. But how do you take a look at this spot for the Boston Red Sox and Winkowski in general? Because he came up through the minor leagues as a starter, got a few starts early on with the Red Sox, but then was really relegated to a long reliever. Now he's getting another shot as a starter.
Greg, honestly, with the Red Sox, I can't think about betting them in any way whatsoever, because they don't really play good defense and you never know what you're going to get from them. And they really don't have a talented roster right now. Offensively, they're dealing with some injuries. So it's hard to bet them in any capacity. I know they've won two straight games, but the pitching matchup isn't here with Josh Winkowski. Even if he goes a couple innings and we give it to the bullpen, I don't have confidence. I don't have confidence in the closing situation with Kenley Jansen. This is like me speaking unbiasedly from a fandom perspective. This is from a betting perspective totally. I'm not saying I would take the Pittsburgh Pirates here, because the Red Sox have had their number over the past couple days, but I really don't want to bet Josh Winkowski when I don't know what he's going to do as a starter. Martin Perez has been decent in his 24 innings on the mound this season. In the Pittsburgh Pirates, we know they can score some runs. They're on a cold streak right now. They got swept by the Mets and potentially going to get swept by the Red Sox here. So not a side I would want to take, no matter what the line is, either way.
And familiarity in this one as well, as Martin Perez spent quite a few years with the Boston Red Sox as well. So those are always intriguing spots. And how do you take a look at some of the spots where you do have a pitcher going up against a former team? Because I take a look at a spot like Martin Perez going up against the Boston Red Sox, and typically what I've deciphered is when you do have a pitcher going up against their former team, it either seems to go really, really well for the pitcher or really badly. You don't see a lot of like six innings, giving up 2 to 3 runs, a ho-hum average starter, anything like that. Feels like they either get destroyed or they're absolutely incredible.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And I usually lean towards them being more better than worse, just because when you look at a pitcher, they have a lot of time to watch games, right? They see how pitchers are. They see how batters are if they're paying attention. They see how their players or their teammates play. So now they get the chance to face them. I think they have this slight advantage over the hitter or the position player watching the pitcher once a week and getting a few at-bats, obviously, in spring training off them. But I usually tend to say it goes better than worse. it doesn't really impact how I bet. I kind of bet it the same way. I look at, okay, how does Martin Perez match up against the Red Sox? How do the Red Sox hit left-handers? Like that goes through my head more than the fact that, you know, we have a former player who's going against his old team.
No doubt about it. And I do think that those can be a little bit of tricky spots, and you never know which way it's going to go, because sometimes when you bank on it one way, it goes the complete opposite. But I do think that this is one where I feel like we're starting to get a little bit of a feel for this team, and it's not been great. The Miami Marlins, they were able to win game one of that doubleheader against the Chicago Cubs yesterday, so credit where credit is due. But now they've got Edward Cabrera on the mound, who, if you take a look at his first start of the season against the San Francisco Giants, was looking relatively solid there. But they're on the road facing off against the Cubs against a guy in Kyle Hendricks, who has been absolutely awful this far this season. But I look at Kyle Hendricks. He's always pitched better at home rather than away from him. Big bugaboo for him has been the home run ball going up against a Miami Marlins team that they don't supply a lot of home runs. Wind is going to be blowing in Chicago on Sunday, and being able to get the Cubs at a minus 120 to minus 125 number, I feel like it's a relatively good spot here.
Yeah, I agree with that too. You have to take the risk of betting on Kyle Hendricks, and there's always risk associated with that, even with the wind blowing in at Wrigley. This is a guy, if he misses his spots, he's going to get shelled, obviously, with the 12.7 ERA and the 2.24 whip. 31 hits allowed in 17 innings, Greg. I think last time I was on your show, we were talking about, I forget what the pitcher was, but it was a lot of walks. Kyle Hendricks, the equivalent of that.
A.J. Puck.
A.J. Puck, yeah, A.J. Puck. And that game ended up getting rained out, obviously, but they played the next day. But Kyle Hendricks, just, he is that equivalent when it comes to giving up hits. This is a spot, though, where the Cubs offense is that much better and their bullpen is better. They're just a better overall team. Team ERA of a 4.19 compared to the Marlins at a 5. And then when you look at the batting stats here, the Cubs have scored about 35 more runs than them this season. So even the pitching matchups aside, you know, I think Kyle Hendricks is a good get-right spot for him and a good spot to take the Cubs for a fair price.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And I do take a look at the board that we do have for Sunday, and it's a pretty intriguing one. We've got ourselves some nice matchups out there. We've got ourselves, obviously, a few teams that have been struggling, as we were alluding to as well. But are there a few games in particular that you take a look at and maybe you're going to be placing a few bets there, or maybe you're not going to be placing a few bets, but you just want to gauge a pitcher, you want to gauge a team a little bit more in general because they've been a little bit hard to decipher this far this season?
Yeah, so one game that I'm really looking at for just a watching perspective here, Chris Bassitt versus Joe Musgrove with the Blue Jays versus the Padres. Neither pitcher has really had command this season, and we know both these guys have capability to be good. We just haven't necessarily seen it. I'm really looking at Musgrove, too, because in his 24 innings this season, 1.77 whip, he's walked 11 batters in 24 innings, given up 3 home runs, just really hasn't had a lot of control here. I think this is a good spot to take the Padres because of their offense and their firepower. But still, that's one game that I'm just watching to watch there. And then another one that I'm looking at as well, potentially the Diamondbacks and the Giants game. I mean, Merrill Kelly and Jordan Hicks have both been really good on the mound. The total of 7.5 is definitely appealing here just because when you have two good pitchers, it doesn't matter how good the offenses are. I mean, the game tends to stay under. Looking at this one here, Kelly's had a 2.19 ERA. Jordan Hicks has a 1.57 ERA. Both guys have whips under one right now. They don't walk a lot of batters. They don't give up a ton of home runs. Probably looking at the under 7.5.
Yep, I think that that's a relatively good look as well. And 7.5 is a little bit of a roll of the dice to go under on, but I do think that with the pitchers that you've got just enough there and a little bit of a pitcher-friendly ballpark to be able to keep that one under as well. And Tanner, I know that you're doing such great work taking a look at this tremendous game that we all know and love of baseball. But on top of that, you're looking at a little bit of everything, getting psyched up for the NFL draft, getting everything all prepared for the NHL and NBA playoffs as well. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, a ton of content coming out for all sports right now. We're in a great time with NBA and NHL playoffs going on. So you can follow me on Twitter at @TannerKern_. My biggest following and where I do most of my content is on TikTok with the short form video. So that's just @TannerKern. And then you can find me on the DraftKings Sportsbook Instagram and TikTok every day doing videos.
Absolutely. And Tanner does a great job on that front. Every single time he joins the show, lends great insights and makes us just a little bit smarter. So big thanks to Tanner for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Sunday as we touch them all.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Guard like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Always great to be able to get Tanner Kern aboard. He does tremendous work over at DraftKings, covering a little bit of everything, does a great job on the baseball front. He loves the sport much like I do, but I know that he's all psyched up for the NHL, NBA playoffs, doing a great job on the NFL draft as well, so always appreciate his time. Big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this baseball Sunday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at @unit_81, and we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games in the National League first, then the American League games, the interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom, though. We do have one addition at the bottom, since we are going to be having a doubleheader with the Mariners and the Colorado Rockies. That is just going to be combined. I'll do both games at the same time for that doubleheader. So how about if we get things started with 901, 902 on the betting board. It is the Milwaukee Brewers on the road facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals. Colin Ray says hip hip hooray to another start for the Brewers, and Sonny Gray is on the bump for the Cardinals. Cardinals between -156, -166 favorites, anywhere between +140 to +147. That number on the Brewers, 8 is the total, over and under both at -110. So we'll take a +145 or higher here with the Brewers. Barely within that number, but we have gone to a +145 in a lot of spots, so I'm going to be willing to take that shot. Colin Ray, since joining the Milwaukee Brewers, does have about a half a point lower on his ERA when he's away from home rather than when he is at home, just because Milwaukee is a ballpark that allows quite a few homers, and he's able to keep the ball in the yard a little bit easier when he is away from home. He's given up 3 runs or fewer in each out of his 3 starts this far this season. Not going to get a bunch of strikeouts or anything like that. Wasn't a strikeout pitcher last year. 11 punchouts here in 16 and 2/3 innings this far this season, but has located really well. Just 3 walks and 3 starts, and for Sonny Gray, you date it back to last season. This guy has just been very, very good at holding down the fort. He has given up 3 earned runs or fewer in all but 3 out of his last 34 starts here to begin the season since he got back into the fold after he was on the injured list to begin the campaign. 2 starts, 11 innings, has yet to give up a run. One of those starts was on the road against an Oakland A's team that can't get anything going on offense, but still, he has been very impressive with that regard. Good, but not great swing and miss guy. 11 strikeouts through 11 innings thus far this season. You can expect a lot of that. Sometimes gets a little bit loose with the walks, but among qualifying American League pitchers last season, as he was with the Minnesota Twins, gave up the fewest home runs per 9 innings of those that qualified. But nice to go up against Brewers team that's averaging more than 7 runs per game away from home. Christian Yelich being out of the fold should help out his cause a little bit, but you have so many guys like Willy Adames, Sal Frelick, Bryce Turang, these young guys who are hitting above a 300. Adames has been so much better at moving the line this year. William Contreras, 4 bombs, 444 on base. Blake Perkins is hitting above a 300. You've been able to get just production up and down the boulevard for the Brewers. Relatively solid power, very good ways of finding a way on, whether that be through batting average, whether that be through drawing walks. Meanwhile, for the Cardinals, they were able to bust out a little bit yesterday, but this has been a rough start to the season for Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Gorman. Both of these guys hitting below .180. Gorman has been able to give the team 3 home runs, but you're just expecting a little bit more out of some of these guys in the middle of the fold. The young guys like Victor Scott, Jordan Walker in the outfield have done a big giant nothing burger. Brendan Donovan is in a big giant funk. Typically, it's quite well at home. It's not been the case this far. It's really been Mason Wynn and Nolan Arenado, the lone two guys that see consistent at-bats, nearing above 300. Wilson Contreras has been relatively solid as well. I know that he, along with the young catcher, Nevan Hereria, have been swapping at-bats at the catcher spot. And for the Cardinals, the bullpen has been relatively solid. Entered Indy yesterday in the top 10 in the league with regards to bullpen ERA. Fell off a little bit yesterday because they had to be used a lot since Miles Michaelis can't give you any sort of length, but Ryan Elsley, he was an all-star a few seasons ago, but really the lone guy that returns from last year's bullpen that had a sub-3.5 ERA. I'd like the pickup of Andrew Kittredge, but Ryan Fernandez, Andre Pallante, guys like this have been rough, and for the Brewers, a top-5 bullpen in terms of ERA a season ago have been pretty rock solid thus far this season. Joe Piamps, Elvis Figueroa, Hobie Milner all had a sub-3.3 ERA a season ago. Abner Uribe can be all over the place, but he has really good stuff, and like what I've seen out of Brian Hudson as well, he's got a sub-1 ERA, so I do think that the Brewers have what it takes to be able to get the job done here, and I do think that the Brewers are going to be able to get into this bullpen and get to Sonny Gray a little bit. So did something I told at 8.3, I like the over, and at a plus 145 rider, I like the Brewers on the money line. Now we have my DK Network rider pick, 903, 904 on the betting board. It is the Chicago Cubs playing against the Miami Marlins. Edward Cabrera is on the bump for Miami, and the professor of Kyle Hendricks is on the bump for the Cubs. Cubs are between minus 120 to minus 125 favorites, between plus 105 to plus 110, that number on Miami. No total up on this game. It's a Wrigley Field game, so most books are going to be posting that up in the AM, but did sell my total at 8.1, 8 or less. I'm going to be taking a look at the over 8.5 or higher to the under. Not going to be doing a write-up on a total that is completely unknown, so have no fear there, but my write-up is going to be on the Cubs' money line. I'm willing to lay up to a minus 148. If you look at the wind conditions that we are expecting in Wrigley Field on Sunday, looks like the wind is going to be blowing in. Looks like it's going to be a little bit of a cooler day, so that very much plays to the advantage of Kyle Hendricks, who throughout his career has always been a different pitcher when he's been at home rather than when he's been away from home. He gives up less than a home run per 9 innings when he's at home, more like 1.1 home runs per 9 innings when he is away from home, and for his ERA, it's about a 3.23 at home throughout his career, 3.96 when he is away from home. He does a better job of not giving up as many walks as well, and the big thing that has been killing Kyle Hendricks this far this season, a 12.71 ERA, 7 home runs allowed in 4 starts, 17 total innings, is the fact that 3 out of these 4 starts have come away from him. I think getting back in front of the home crowd at Wrigley Field, along with that wind blowing in, is going to do him so good. And he goes up against someone at Edward Cabrera. In his first start of the season, he was tremendous. Strikes out 10, gives up 1 run in 6 innings against the San Francisco Giants. Problem is, his bullpen made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. The Marlins bullpen entering into yesterday, 29th of the big leagues, with an ERA of a 5.62. And to play a double dip yesterday, so that bullpen got used up quite a bit. And for Edward Cabrera, he's got really good stuff last season. 10.7 strikeouts per 9 innings. He supplied about a 4.25 ERA, but he was giving up 6 walks per 9 innings, which means that a bullpen that is already taxed probably going to need to be sent out there quite a bit more. I think that his first start of the season was very encouraging against the Giants, but he can't make too much out of one start. And for the Miami Marlins, they're just not really putting bat to ball. Going into game 2 of their double dip yesterday, averaging about 3.65 runs per contest thus far this season. Brian De La Cruz has been awesome. He's been able to give you 5 home runs, but he was the only player in that double dip game number 2 that entered into the game with more than 2 home runs. You've had Tim Anderson only hit about a 250. Luis Reyes has been able to do an okay job of moving the line, but these guys like Avisio Garcia, Emmanuel Rivera, Josh Bell hitting a 225 or lower without a lot of pop, that's absolutely killing the team. Meanwhile, for the Chicago Cubs, going into game 2 of the doubleheader yesterday, they were averaging north of 6.5 runs per game at home. Been able to get some good production out of Garrett Cooper, hitting right around about a 300. And just have a lot of guys in general that are able to move the line. Nick Madrigal, Nico Horner, they find a way on. It's been a little bit of a rough start to the season for Cody Bellinger, Christopher Morel, 3 home runs apiece entering into game 2 of that doubleheader, but seems like Bellinger over the last week or so has been able to get back to that form that was so good for him a season ago, and he had Michael Busch provide a home run in 5 straight games last week, so he's really been able to do a nice job. And for the Cubs, 18th in the league in terms of bullpen ERA. Not saying it's amazing, but it's a whole heck of a lot better than what the Marlins are providing as of right now. You've got long guys that are able to hold down the fort like Drew Smyly, Keegan Thompson that are able to fill multiple innings. Ed Brawlsley has been relatively solid in the closer spot. And for the Miami Marlins, they should have left A.J. Puck in the bullpen. They could really use him right about now, as Brian Hoying has probably been your best bullpen piece. These likes like Andrew Scott, Tanner Nardi have just forgotten how to pitch this far this season. Declan Cronin at this point is your long guy, and he already got used in the series, so it's a rough state of affairs for this Miami Marlins team, and I do think that the demise, it continues. My write-up pick is going to be on the Cubs' money line, and did somebody tell the wearer 88 or less, I'm going to be taking a look at the over 8.5 higher, the under 9-5, 9-6 on the bank board, the San Francisco Giants, playoffs to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Merrill Kelly is on the bump for the Saints, Jordan Nix is on the bump for San Francisco, and San Francisco is a minus 108 to a minus 115 favorite between even money and minus 105. That number on Arizona, 7.5 is the total, over is minus 115, the under is minus 105. I mean, the Giants a minus 112 favorite, so you're at about a minus 108, minus 110. I'm going to be willing to side with them on the money line. I've actually been really impressed by what Jordan Nix has been able to provide as a starter. I think that the St. Louis Cardinals tried once before to make him a starter. That was a little bit of a failure, but whatever the Giants have clicked, it has worked thus far for Jordan Nix. He has made 4 starts, and he's been absolutely incredible, giving up only 2.3 walks per 9 innings. He's kept the ball in the yard, giving up 1 home run across 23 innings, lending quite a bit of length for a guy that was in the bullpen just a season ago. And even though the strikeout numbers are down for his career, we're around about 9.2, 9.3 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's been getting just 7 strikeouts per 9 innings this season. His location has been very good, and he gets to go up against a bunch in the Arizona Diamondbacks that have been a top 8 lineup in the big leagues in terms of run score, but it does diminish quite a bit when they're away from home rather than when they are at home, when you take out the Coors Field numbers, just because things always get a little bit harebrained in Coors. Now, I will say, you've got Lourdes Gurriel, Ketel Marte, both of these guys 4-plus home runs, both of these guys providing north of a 355 on base. And Christian Walker, he's been able to give you about a 390 on base as well for this Arizona Diamondbacks team. He's been able to supply 3 home runs, but you do have a few guys that they need to pick it up a little bit. Corbin Carroll is only giving you 1 home run with about a 325 on base. Blaze Alexander has actually been a really nice find for the team, but whatever they have at the bottom of the fold, whether that be Mr. Jace Peterson, Kevin Newman, guys like this, have not necessarily been able to provide a whole heck of a lot in for the Giants. That's been a little bit hit or miss in terms of lineup as well, but even though you haven't necessarily gotten the world's greatest on base from the likes of Jorge Soler, Matt Chapman, these guys have been able to supply the boom with 3-plus home runs apiece. Jungle Lee, it feels like it's really starting to figure it out. Not drawing a lot of walks, but it's now hitting a 290. He went deep yesterday, while Patrick Bailey went 4-4 yesterday, and he's been able to absolutely erupt, while Lamont Wade Jr. has been the main constant in terms of being able to move the line, hitting above a 350 for the Giants. Bullpen has been much more rough than it has been in past years. They have had to have quite a bit of usage, especially in the Blake Snell starts, unfortunately. But Taylor and Tyler Rogers, still relatively trustworthy in the bullpen. And you know that if you could get to Camilo Duvall, you're staring at a good chance of being able to close that game out. It's all about what are you going to be able to get out of some of these younger guys like Eric Miller and company. Meanwhile, for the Arizona Diamondbacks, it's been about a league average bullpen. They're currently dealing with an injury to Luis Frias, but it's not necessarily too much of a loss. I like what I've seen out of Ryan Thompson along Kyle Nelson over the last few seasons. So Scott Mago has been a little bit touch and go, and Joe Mantiply just does not appear to be himself. For Merrill Kelly, he's always had some pretty demonstrative home and road splits. So last year, he was able to pitch so much better on the road than he had been throughout his entire career, and he's off to a relatively solid start thus far this season as well. Not getting as many strikeouts as he did a season ago, but thus far through 4 starts, he has allowed 3 home runs in 24 and 2/3 innings, but just 6 walks after last season. He had more strikeouts, but he was also walking a few more guys. I do think that for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they're going to be able to do a relatively solid job of holding down the fort, but I'm very bullish on what Jordan Nix has been able to provide for this team. It is going to be a day game in San Francisco, so helps out the hitters a little bit more than the nighttime, but as we know, San Francisco is very much a pitcher's ballpark, which is why you're seeing such a low total in this one. I think that we've gone just a little bit too far with it, though. This is a total that I did set more in the neighborhood of an 8.2, so I'm going to be looking at the over as the Diamondbacks have done a solid job of being able to put bat to ball. Both of these bullpens are a little bit rough, but with the Giants, want to lay up to a minus 111 with that money line to go along with the over. 9-7, 9-8 on the bank board. The New York Mets hit the road, they're facing off against the LA Dodgers. It is Tyler Glasso is going to be on the bump for the Dodgers, and Adrian, don't call him Doogie Howser, is on the bump for the Mets. This was supposed to be James Paxton, and when we saw Paxton on the board, it was a total of 9.5 shaded down to the under, and the Dodgers were laying between minus 172 to minus 180, about plus 150 to plus 158, that number on the New York Mets. We have yet to see a number get reposted with it now being Tyler Glasnow, but I'd be willing to lay up to about a minus 120 with that Dodgers run line. I would need at least a plus 214 to take a shot on the Mets, and somebody told to wear an 8.5 for less, I'm going to be taking a look at the over, a 9 or higher to the under, as for the LA Dodgers, has been a relatively rough state of affairs for them the last few games. They have now lost 4 out of their last 5. I do think that this is a nice bounce back spot for the LA Dodgers, and the Dodgers have the propensity to really win these games by multiple runs. Over the last 3 seasons since the start of the 2022 campaign, they have won a grand total of 223 games during the regular season, and all but 35 of them have been by multiple runs. So I do think that that is something to be so mindful of. And for the LA Dodgers, you still have a lineup that is doing a tremendous job of moving line, getting on base. So it is a little bit of top-heavy lineup. Gavin Lux, Chris Taylor, you're able to throw in there guys like a James Outman, Andy Pages. These are guys hanging below the middle sign of 200. But you take a look at the top of the fold, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Teoscar Hernandez, all at least 3 home runs in the case of Betts and Teoscar Hernandez. A combined 11 home runs between the two of them. Betts and Ohtani north of a 415 on base. Freddie Freeman has not necessarily given you a ton of power this season, but he's been able to provide nearly a 400 on base as well. But the Mets are starting to find their offense as well, as Pete Alonso has 6 home runs. You had a rough start to the season for Francisco Lindor. He's still hitting just .181, but he's starting to be able to move the line. They get back Prep Addy after he was dealing with a little bit of an injury. Harrison Bader, Joey Wendell are hitting above a 300. So it's coming around for the Mets. So I do think that it's going to be touch and go all season long. And the big thing for the Mets is they have to try to get to Edwin Diaz, because the relievers outside of Edwin Diaz, they can be a little bit less than trustworthy. Adam Ottavino, Brooks Raley, they're not great, they're not terrible. But like Sofie Garrett, Jorge Lopez, that's rough. But the LA Dodgers, they're about league average, just slightly below average in terms of their bullpen as well. They did let a few guys like Caleb Ferguson in the offseason walk, so that does leave them a little bit hamstrung there. Alex Vesia is someone that's been able to do a relatively solid job in the bullpen, but have absolutely no faith whatsoever in Joe Kelly, and they've got a good closure in their own in Evan Phillips. And for Tyler Glass, so last start out against the Washington Nationals, got completely banged around, but this guy is still one of the best pitchers that you're going to find in the big leagues. He, thus far this season, has given up 4 home runs in 29 innings, but he's been able to do a nice job providing 10.5 strikeouts per 9 innings outside that start against the Washington Nationals. His previous 3 starts has been pretty rock solid, and I just take a look at Adrian Houser, and it's just a tough guy to be able to back in general. He was able to cut down on the walks last season with the Milwaukee Brewers, and did look better during that 2023 campaign, but has just been a little bit all over the boulevard. Right now, about a 470 ERA compared to about a 438 fielding independent. Not getting any swings and misses as of right now, but he's not giving up a lot of hard contact as well. And for Adrian Houser, for his career, he's done a solid job of that. In 2 out of the last 3 years, has given up 0.8 home runs per 9 innings or less, but when you're getting more walks surrendered rather than strikeouts, which he has right now, he has given out 10 walks and he's gotten just 9 strikeouts across his 3 starts as far as this season, having to go up against this Dodgers lineup. I do think that that makes it rather difficult. So would be willing to lay up to a minus 120 with regards to this Dodgers run line. And with regards to the total, I did set my total out at 8.9. I do think that things are going to be tamed down a little bit more. And I do think that the Dodgers come into form with regards to their bullpen. So 8.5 or less, going to be looking at the over 9 or higher to the under. And would need at least a plus 214 to take a shot on the Mets. Willing to lay up to a minus 120 with that Dodgers run line. 909, 910 on the betting board. The Tampa Bay Rays, they throw the facing off against the New York Yankees. Luis Eel is on the bump for the Yankees, and Aaron Saval, he goes for the Tampa Bay Rays. Total opens up at 9. Now we're seeing at 8.5 over and under anywhere between minus 105 to minus 115. With the Yankees, they're between minus 130 to minus 135 favorites, between plus 114 to plus 120. That number on the Tampa Bay Rays, and would need at least a plus 124 to be able to take a shot here on the Tampa Bay Rays. If you're looking at laying a run and a half with the Yankees, you're getting between about plus 150 to plus 155. That plus 155 would be my buy point if I absolutely had to bet this right now, but I'm going to be gauging to see if we do get a little bit of line movement here as the Yankees open up more around a minus 135. They've already been bet down to about a minus 130 because with Luis Eel, just not willing to lay too much of a big number with him, and I do think that his starts are going to be involving a little bit more volatility because Eel is just a strikeout artist. You take a look at what he's done through his first few starts of the season, he's gotten 20 strikeouts in 14 innings. The problem is, in 14 innings, he's also given out 14 walks. He's a pretty unhittable guy, but he just puts on so many guys that even one hit, that's a little bit costly for him. He has given up 3 hits or fewer in all 3 of his starts this far this season, but he's given up as many hits as runs because 3 plus walks in each of these 3 starts. That knocks him out of games relatively early, as yet to fill north of 5 innings. Meanwhile, you've got someone in Aaron Saval who's been pretty rock solid this far this season. He's up to about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. Now, he does give up the deep ball. He's pretty much the opposite of Luis Eel, giving up 4 walks in 23 innings, but he's given up 5 home runs in his 23 innings and at least 1 home run in each out of his 4 starts this far this season. And now he has to go to Yankee Stadium, where As we know, that short porch, that does allow for a lot of cheap home runs. Yankees got shut out yesterday. I don't think that we can bank on that once again, as we've got Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, both supplying five home runs. Stanton has become a little bit of an all-or-nothing guy with just a 280 on base. Meanwhile, Soto is providing about a 470 on base. He has been tremendous with that regard. But Anthony Volpe, though, he's cooled down a little bit, still hitting above a 300 as of right now. The guys that you need to be able to get online, though, Gleyber Torres, Aaron Judge, both of these guys hitting below 200, so that's been a little bit rough. While guys like Oswaldo Cabrera have been able to hold down the fort for the Yankees, and this is a Yankees bullpen that last season was in the top three in the big leagues with regards to their ERA in the bullpen. Still solid. They have fallen outside the top five, but I did like the fact that they picked up Caleb Ferguson in the offseason. They get back Ron Mananacchio, has been relatively solid for them. Danny Santana, he could be a little bit up and down, but I do like what he's able to provide for the team and for the Tampa Bay Rays. They actually entered in the weekend dead last in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You know that this is going to be reversing course sooner rather than later. It is a little bit diminished in my opinion, but you got the likes of Jason Adam, Garrett Clevenger, guys like this. You know that they're going to be relatively stable thus far this season. Phil Maton, Pete Fairbanks, they're posting up north of a 70 ERA. I do think that they're going to be able to get back in line. The big thing that I have concern with for the Tampa Bay Rays is the top of the fold. Are you going to be able to get Randy Arozarena and Yandy Diaz to start to hit once again? Both of these guys providing a sub 280 on base. You did get multiple hits, so yesterday out of Yandy Diaz, Ahmed Rosario has done a nice job of being able to get on base. 343 batting average on just a 352 on base. He's not generating a lot of walks, but he, Jerick Albreo, both of these guys find a way on, but the entire catcher spot for the team has been a little bit rough, though. Ben Rothfit, in a very small sample size, has been looking solid, but the Rays not generating a lot of power as of right now, so it makes it a little bit of a tricky spot. Here at an 8.5, I'm going to be taking a look at the overs. I do think that Luis Gil just not going to be too long for this game, and the Rays are really struggling with their bullpen, but at a plus 124 or higher, I'd be willing to take a shot on the Rays. If we could get the Yankees down to about a minus 123 or so, we'll be siding with them. If I, like I said, absolutely had to bet it right now, I'd be taking a look at that Yankees run line, but trying to see which way I'm going to be going on the money line as of right now to go along with that over. 9-11, 9-12 on the betting board. The Oakland A's hit the road to facing off against the Cleveland Guardians. Got Tanner Bibee on the bump for Cleveland, and Ross Stripling goes for Oakland. 7.5 is the total. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. With Oakland, you're going to be getting them between plus 160 to plus 170. Anywhere between minus 182 to minus 192. That is your number on Cleveland. And for the Guardians, need at least a plus 174 to take a shot. They open up initially at a plus 160. So we're going to be checking our prospects there. If you're looking to lay a run and a half with the Cleveland Guardians, you're actually getting that at a plus 120. And I recognize that the Oakland A's had that really nice run of being able to cover run lines. I do think that it's going to start to regress to the point of Tanner Kern. As of right now, I'm looking at the Cleveland Guardians getting a plus 120 on that run line, just because I do think that the bullpen is good enough to be able to preserve it at home. If they're able to get any sort of a lead, they're going to be able to do a nice job locking it down. Guardians entered in the series number two in the big leagues with regards to bullpen ERA. They just have so much depth out there. Nick Sandlin was a little bit up and down last season, but he and Tim Aaron have looked tremendous to begin the season. Really, other than Tyler Beede, darn near everyone has been solid in this bullpen. Emmanuel Clase has been just a lights-out closer for this team, and you've got an Oakland A's team that they entered into the series number three in the big leagues with regards to bullpen ERA. They've taken a little bit of a drop-off, but all in all, you take a look at some of these guys like Danny Jimenez, Lucas Ursed, you're able to throw in there Austin Adams, guys like this. They're providing a sub-3 ERA, and they've been tremendous to begin the season. The problem that you've got for the Oakland A's is that this team is just simply not hitting. They're in the bottom three in the big leagues with regards to runs per game. It's Jerry Ruiz at the top of the fold. I have no idea why he was sent down to the minor league level, but it's been absolutely masterful for this team, hitting well above a 300, was towards the top of the league with regards to stolen bases last season, and Tyler Nevin has been able to hit about a 300 as well. Past that, though, the guys like Brent Rooker, Zach Aloff, Ryan Noah, Shea Langeliers, they were relatively solid 8 seasons ago. They just have provided a big giant nothing burger for you. Meanwhile, for the Cleveland Guardians, they're improved from what they were 8 seasons ago at the plate, as last season they were dead last in the big leagues with regards to home runs. They were able to do a solid job of being able to just make contact, but they weren't really driving the ball out of the yard. You've been able to get a little bit more of that with Josh and Bo Naylor being able to combine for 6 home runs entering into the game yesterday. You got Josh Naylor by himself now, actually up to 6 home runs, so that has been massive for this bunch, but you did go look past that, and they're still just really good at finding a way to be able to move the line. Dylan Frey, Stephen Kwan, both hitting above a 325. Has been huge, and it's not even like Jose Ramirez is having the biggest season for the team. A sub 250 batting average as of right now with limited power. You've had Ramon Laureano give you a big giant nothing burger, but these guys guys like Gabriel Arias and company have been able to do a relatively solid job. And for Ross Stripling, when he's away from a very, very good pitcher's ballpark, he does tend to struggle as he's very much a pitcher contact guy. He has only been able to give you about 6.5 to 7 strikeouts per 9 innings since the beginning part of the 2023 campaign. Pretty good with regards to command thus far this season, 7 walks in 23 2/3 innings, but he does leave himself prone to giving up just a lot of runs in general. 3+ runs surrendered in 3 out of his 4 starts thus far this season. Good news is he is pitching out there in Cleveland, but I do think that he's going to be outdueled by a guy in Tanner Bibeau. He's been a little bit up and down thus far this season. The walks have been the big issue, 10 walks in 18 2/3 innings, but I do think that he's going to be able to go out there, lend a little bit more length than what he was able to in his first few starts of the season last year. He was more around about a 3 walks per 9 inning guy, and for Tanner Bibeau, he was able to post up an ERA more than a full point better when he was at home rather than away from home a season ago. This year we've seen a little bit of reverse splits, but that's because he's only thrown 4 1/3 innings at home this far this season. But I do think that he's going to be able to get online here. So did set the Guardians where I'm willing to take that plus 120 laying a run and a half, set them more at around a minus 174 on the money line, and did set my total at an 8.2. I think that we've got a little bit too low with this total. I do think that Stripling leaves himself prone to giving up runs. So looking at the over and Cleveland on the run line. 9.13, 9.14 on the betting board. The Baltimore Orioles are on the road. They're facing off against the Kansas City Royals. Seth Lugo goes for the Royals, and Cole Irvin is on the bump for Baltimore. Baltimore is an underdog, anywhere between plus 105 to plus 110, between minus 120 to minus 125 is that number on Kansas City. 9 is the total. Unders between minus 110 to a minus 120. The over is anywhere between even a minus 110. And for the Baltimore Orioles, I made them the slightest of slight favorites, so I'm going to be willing to take a plus number on them, set this line at a minus 102 on the Baltimore Orioles. Now for Cole Irvin, it has been a very, very rough start to the season, and there's no denying it. The Kansas City Royals, they have a very clear pitching advantage with regards to starting pitching, but I do think that the Baltimore Orioles are going to be able to make up for it on the back half of things, even with them having Felix Bautista out of the fold. This has still been one of the better bullpens out there in the big leagues. You still have a lot of guys like Danny Colomb, who I really like. They get back Dylan Tate after he was missing for the entirety of the season last year as well. Craig Kimbrell has actually been halfway decent for this team, so that's been relatively rock solid as well. And for Cole Irvin, I think the biggest thing for him is just being able to calm down the walks a little bit, because he is very much a pitch of contact guy, always has been. For his career, he's gotten about 6.7 to 6.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, right on kilter with that as well, but he's also been a little bit unlucky on balls in play as well. 6.75 ERA, but a 4.50 fielding independent. I do think that that positivity is going to be coming through, and for Seth Lugo, he has been tremendous here for the Kansas City Royals. He made the jump from being in the bullpen to being a starter a season ago, and he has just taken in a run thus far this season. 1.05 ERA has yet to give up a home run in his 4 starts, filling 25 2/3 innings out. Fielding independence more around a 3. He's not getting any swings and misses whatsoever, about 4.6 strikeouts per 9 innings. So I do think that that is going to lead to a Baltimore Orioles offense that is right now in the top 6 in the big leagues with regards to runs scored, and I believe that they are number 1 in terms of total home runs to being able to have some success. We saw what they were able to do yesterday against Cole Ragans, and I mean, it's just up and down the boulevard. You don't necessarily have that one superstar guy. You just have everyone as a collective finding a way to be able to move the line, get on base, as you've got right now Ryan Mountcastle, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, all hitting above a 300. Gunnar Henderson has provided 5+ home runs. They're doing this with Anthony Santander not even doing a great job moving the line, though. He's been able to supply the team with 4 home runs, as for Henderson, Santander, Cowser, Ryan O'Hearn, Cedric Mullins, Westberg, they've all got 4+ home runs thus far this season. They've got so much depth that they're able to platoon for righties and lefties, so they don't have any real weak points there. And for the Royals, this has been a relatively solid offense for them as well. Mikel Garcia, after a good start to the season, he's cooled off quite a bit, 216 on base, but he provides a little bit of pop with his bat. I like what Vinny Pascantino has been able to do recently as well. Had a rough first week or so of the season, but he, along Salvador Perez, Bobby Witt Jr., have all been able to supply 4+ home runs. All these guys have been able to give you a nice average of at least a 270 or greater, and Perez goes deep yesterday. But the bottom of the fold for the Royals, it is a little bit of a concern. The guys like Adam Frazier, Kyle Isbell, Hunter Renfro hitting below the Mendoza line of 200, that's an issue. And for the Royals, the bullpen ERA has been relatively league average at this point. I don't know if this is going to be long-lasting. Anel Zarapata has honestly been a relatively good long guy. Matt Sauer is someone that I am not souring on, but likes of James MacArthur, Nick Anderson, Will Smith. These are very unreliable pieces, and even though I do think that Seth Lugo is going to turn a good start, I do think that he's up against it against a Baltimore Orioles team that is just doing a great job in general of being able to put bat to ball, and I do think that Cole Irvin is going to be able to find a way to come down and hold down the fort. I did set my total at a 9.3. This Orioles team has just been slugging in general, and this is a Royals ballpark that does allow quite a few runs, so I do like the over, and with Baltimore being able to get any sort of plus number, I'm going to be on them on the money line. 915, 916 on the bank board. The Minnesota Twins, they play us the Detroit Tigers. Casey Mize is on the bump for the Tigers, and Louis Varland, Louis is on the bump for Minnesota. Pretty much a pick'em game. Minnesota's any between minus 104 to minus 112. Meanwhile, with Detroit, you're going to be getting them any between minus 103 to a minus 110. Total on this game is 8. The over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. Set the Twins at a minus 113. So at this pick'em number, I'd be willing to take them on the money line. For Minnesota, the offense has been very, very rough, to say the least. Dead last in the big leagues entering into the series in terms of their batting average, sans the Chicago White Sox, which everything needs to be prefaced with sans the Chicago White Sox at this point for offense. I mean, my goodness gracious, that has not been good. But that said, I do think that we should be seeing a little bit of positivity with them. If you take a look at the Baseball Savant numbers, the Minnesota Twins entered into Saturday with a .91 batting average, but an expected batting average more around a .216. Is it great? No, but it indicates that they've been getting a little bit unlucky, and you've been able to get a little bit of pop in the bats of Ryan Jeffers, Edouard Julien. These two guys have been able to combine for 7 home runs thus far this season. It's very clear that not having Royce Lewis in the fold has been hurting them, but Alex Kirloff, he's been able to about a .275 for this unit. You've been able to get a little bit in the outfield as well, with Austin Martin being able to find a way to be able to get on base. Could use a little bit more consistency on the likes of Manuel Margot and company, and still have the likes of Willie Castro, Kyle Farmer, Carlos Santana, Julian, who I mentioned before. All these guys hitting well below the Mendoza line of 200, but it is not as if this Detroit Tigers team is doing a great job ripping the cover off the ball as well. They're hitting about a .223 as a collective. It's been another slow start to the season from a power perspective. For Spencer Torkelson, about a .325 on base, but as many home runs as myself. You got Gary Carpenter, Riley Green, Mark Canna, who will be able to supply 3 home runs apiece, but a grand total of 14 home runs as far this season for the Tigers. That is not terrific. Drew Urshela, along with Gary Carpenter, they're both hitting north of a .280, and Matt Frierling has been able to move the line as well, but I mean, these are like the only three guys on the roster that are hitting above a .235. You have been able to have this team draw a few walks, but that said, it has been very non-existent on offense, and both of these teams have been very rock solid with their bullpen. Both of these teams, top 6 in the big leagues with that regard. For the Detroit Tigers, it's just everyone. You don't necessarily have that one lockdown guy, though Jason Foley has really taken over the reins as a closer, but he, Alex Lang, Andrew Chafin, Will Vez, Shelby Miller, all these guys give you good innings. All these guys give you a sub-3.3 ERA. And for the Minnesota Twins, even with Johan Duran currently being out of the fold, you've had so many guys like Cody Funderburk, Brock Stewart, Stephen Okert. These guys are all giving you relatively solid innings, but it comes down to what you're going to be able to get out of the starters. And for Casey Mize, is he overall the better pitcher? Yes, but keep in mind that he is coming off of pretty much not pitching last season. I do think that him mixing up his pitch mix is going to be good for him moving forward, but you can tell that he's just trying to be able to get back into sort of pitching shape. He's been a little bit unlucky this season, 4.11 ERA, but a .327 fielding independent. Swing and miss stuff has not been masterful, only about 7 punch-outs per 9 innings, but he's doing a good job of locating, giving up less than 2 walks per 9 innings. Meanwhile, you've got Louis Varland, who's been able to do a nice job of just being able to hold down the fort. He does give up a little bit of hard contact, but he doesn't do a bad job of locating throughout his career, about 2.3 walks per 9 innings. Now, he has given up 3.2 home runs per 9 innings. He's made 3 starts. He has thus far given up 5 home runs. I don't think that that's going to be as much of an issue in this spot, and especially pitching out there in Minnesota where it's a little bit harder to drive out the ball. It's not necessarily too warm. I do think that for Minnesota, they are going to be able to have a little bit of success here, and I do think that Varland and the way that he's been locating, it's going to be just enough for Minnesota to be able to get the job done at home, and I do think that there's some upside here with this lineup. So, did somebody tell them at 8.2? Here at the 8, I'm looking at the overs. I do think that both of these starters are going to be surrendering some runs, and both of these bullpens, I think, are doing for a little bit of regression as well. So, I like the over and the Twins on the money line. 9.17, 9.18 on the bank board. The Chicago White Sox throw the face off against the Philadelphia Phillies. Aaron Nola looks to be super for the Phils, and Nick Nastrini is on the bump for the White Sox. The White Sox are anywhere between plus 240 to plus 250 underdogs. Anywhere between minus 280 to minus 305 is that number on the Phillies. 7.5 is the total. The over is between minus 115 to minus 120. The under is anywhere between even to minus 105. And if you're looking to lay a run and a half with the Philadelphia Phillies, you're getting anywhere between minus 135 to minus 140. I was seeing a minus 130 out there a little bit before, and I was willing to dive in on the minus 130. I personally will not be willing to go much further than a minus 135. I do think that we're getting to a little bit of a point of no return, and if we were to get past a plus 260, I'd be willing to take a shot on the White Sox money line. I set them at a plus 258 for the White Sox. This is a sad, embarrassing team. There's no fans or buts about it, but I also think that Aaron Nola is quite a bit overrated. I mean, since the beginning part of the last season, he has been posting up an ERA north of 4, giving up nearly a home run and a half per 9 innings. Has looked better in his last 3 starts. A combined 3 runs surrendered against the Cardinals, the Colorado Rockies, and the Washington Nationals, but perhaps we finally saw a little bit of a spark from the Chicago White Sox. In their first 19 games of the season, they scored 38 runs. They were on the verge of getting no hit yesterday, and then they put up a 5 spot in the 9th inning and had the bases loaded and actually just grounded out. If they hit a grand slam there, they tie it up 9-9. So perhaps that'll get something going, but this is still a sad, pathetic team. As you had in the lineup yesterday, 3 guys that were hitting above a 222, and you had more guys come to the plate yesterday hitting below a buck 75 than hitting above a buck 75. Eloy Jimenez was able to have a multi-hit game, but he's been embarrassing to begin the season. Andrew Vaughn has been terrible. Paul DeJong has actually been your nice upside guy thus far. He's been able to supply the team with 3 home runs, but now he's injured a little bit as well. So, I mean, it's just not great, to say the least, with the Chicago White Sox team. Meanwhile, for the Philadelphia Phillies, you've had Trey Turner down for what really give you something. He's right now providing north of 4 on base. He's been on fire recently, and Bryce Harper seems to be starting to pick it up a little bit. Had an RBI yesterday. Since that 3 home run game, he hasn't necessarily done a ton, but you know what? It's starting to come around for him. We shall see if Nick Castellanos is able to piggyback off a 3-hit game yesterday as well. But the Phillies are typically a little bit of a slow starting team, and the Phillies do certainly have some bullpen issues. That was on full display yesterday. Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado. These guys have been a little bit less than tremendous. Gregory Soto, since the blown opportunity that he had against the Colorado Rockies a few days ago, he's been relatively slow, but that is something to be mindful of. And this is a White Sox team that entered into the game yesterday right around about league average in terms of their bullpen ERA. Now, I think that it's going to be far worse when it's all said and done, because you just take a look at some of the guys that are excelling right now, the likes of a Steven Wilson, Michael Kopech, guys like this. I just don't have a lot of faith in them. The Joey Leisure, I actually do think, is going to be quite solid moving forward. But for Nick Nastrini, relatively good for a start. He was a highly thought of prospect out there in the LA Dodgers organization, and I do think that he's going to be able to give you some swing and miss. I think that he's going to be a suitable pitcher for this team, which suitable for the Chicago White Sox is like amazing for them, but I would need at least a plus 260 to be able to take a shot here on the Chicago White Sox. Personally, I already took the run line. I do think that this is going to be getting up to a point of no return. Like, if you could get up to like a plus 140 or so, getting a run and a half with the White Sox, which I don't think is necessarily blasphemous. As I do this podcast, I'm seeing as high as a plus 125 out there, and there's going to be nobody that's going to take a shot on the White Sox. That might not be the world's worst look. I did set my total at 8.3. I think that the White Sox are going to have a little bit of positivity moving forward with regards to their offense, and I'm just honestly super bullish on Aaron Nola, but man, do I not want to take the Chicago White Sox here. So I personally laid the run line a little bit earlier with the Philadelphia Phillies, and here at the 7.5, I'm looking at the over. 919, 920 on the betting board. The Boston Red Sox hit the road. They're facing off against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It says Martin Perez is on the bump for the Buccos, and Josh Winkowski is going for Boston. Boston is a plus 122 underdog at Circa, currently the only book that has a number up on this game. Minus 140 is that number on Pittsburgh, and total is 8.5. The over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. Plus 122 was pretty much my minimum buy point on the Boston Red Sox. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here as long as this is pretty much a market-wide number that we do get for Josh Winkowski. Not necessarily the world's greatest starter in the world. He began his Boston Red Sox career as a starter, got relegated to the bullpen, but I mean, whatever he's been in long relief, he's been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to hold down the fort, and I would not be surprised if the Boston Red Sox only have him go about 3-4 innings, and then they throw out there like a poo-poo platter of pitchers after that. Justin Slayton has been a guy that has been filling multiple innings for this team. I think that he's going to be good to go. Brandon Bernardino has turned into a nice multi-inning guy for this team, and for the Boston Red Sox, I'm not saying that this bullpen has been necessarily amazing or anything like that, but you you know what, it's not bad. Chris Martin, Kenley Jansen, these are suitable guys as long as the moment isn't like super duper big. Kenley Jansen typically does get the job done for you, and it's a Boston Red Sox bullpen that's about 13th of the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Meanwhile, for the Pittsburgh Pirates, had high expectations for this bullpen coming into the season. The fact that they have been dealing with the injuries to Ryan Borucki and the suspension to Aroldis Chapman, who's going to be good to go in this one, that's hurt them a little bit. Ryder Ryan has been a little bit up and down. I like what David Benar provides, but sometimes can be a little bit all over the place himself. And for Martin Perez, he's had a nice start to the season, but to have to wonder if regression is going to be hitting him rather hard. He's once again giving you less than 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He has been allowing the ball to be put in play quite a bit, and thus far has done a good job with the walks. 7 walks in 24 and 2/3 innings. Now, it takes a heel turn very, very quickly on Martin Perez. Martin Perez has a propensity to give you like 4 good starts and then just lay a big giant turn and go down the toilet bowl from there. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, after a nice start to the season at the plate, they have been struggling a little bit recently. Oneil Cruz has been incredibly inconsistent. He, along Jack Swinisky, Henry Davis, the former number one overall pick, Rowdy Tellez, guys like this, hitting at 225 or lower, not giving you a lot of on base, has been a bit of an issue. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they're in the bottom 5 in the big leagues with regards to home runs on a per game basis. Oneil Cruz has been able to supply 3 along with Ed Olivares, but Ed Olivares has not really been getting consistent at bats. I'm not quite sure why. Meanwhile, you've got a Boston Red Sox team that has been dealing with the injuries of their own. Rafael Devers has been dealing with a little bit of an injury, and I feel like the biggest thing for the Boston Red Sox team is getting the young guys online. You've got the likes of Emmanuel Valdez, Pablo Reyes, Bobby Dalbec, Zadina Rafaela, playing at .170 or lower. And for Bobby Dalbec, I remember this guy was awesome like 3 years ago, and he's currently hitting a .038 with a .107 on base. I mean, these are pretty much the statistics a outer space Martian could put up. So that's not too great, but what has been solid has been Tristan Casas being able to give you a .344 on base, 5 plus home runs. Tyler O'Neill was carrying the team, but currently he's on the concussion injured list. But I do think that you're still going to be able to get a relatively solid effort here from the Boston Red Sox. I do think that with Winkowski, he's going to be able to come down and hold down the fort against this Pittsburgh Pirates lineup. I did set my total at 8.7. 8.5 is the maximum willing to take over, but willing to take it over. Both of these offenses have their issues, but also both of these starting pitchers do as well. And I do think that Martin Perez is going to be going downward sooner rather than later. So looking at the Red Sox at a +122 or higher, along with the over 921, 922 on the betting board. The Houston Astros hit the road faceoff against the Washington Nationals as Christian Javier is on the bump for Houston, and it is young Mitchell Parker who's on the bump for the Nationals. Nationals do find themselves as a +155 to a +165 underdog. Meanwhile, they're between -170 to -185. That is your number on Houston. 9 is the total. The over is -115. The under is -105. And with the Astros, set them -198 on the money line. If you're looking to lay a run and a half, say between -115 to -118, I'd be willing to go up to a -127. With Christian Javier, he is back, and he is back in full force. Last season, in the back half of the campaign, that was not the Christian Javier that we all know and love. He was not getting strikeouts. He was not locating. It was just rough. And the strikeout numbers, they still aren't necessarily great, and I do fear a little bit of regression here because he has given up 11 walks in 23 and a third innings. You're just going to get that with Christian Javier throughout his career. As always, given up north of 3 walks per 9 innings, but he's done a good job of being able to induce softer contact, even though the swing and miss stuff has not been there. And you've got a Washington Nationals team that they don't necessarily strike out a ton, but they don't do the world's greatest job of being able to put a sting on the ball. I like what I've seen out of C.J. Abrams. He's been able to supply 6 home runs this far this season. He's hitting at .300, but some of these guys that were so solid for them a season ago, Joey Meneses. I know that Kiber Ruiz has been sort of in and out of the fold, but he, Lane Thomas, you're able to go down the list of guys currently at .225 or lower. That's been less than tremendous. They bring Joey Gallo, and currently is hitting a .143. It's the old Joey Gallo special. He either gives you a home run, a double, or he gives you a strikeout. You don't get any singles out of him whatsoever. But that said, Eddie Rosario has been a big giant turd as well. .54 on base with 1 home run. That has been a little bit less than tremendous. But Jesse Winker providing north of .455 on base. That's been solid. And the Washington Nationals bullpen, they've been okay. They haven't been great. They haven't been terrible. Jordan Weems is someone I like. He's been able to supply a sub-250 ERA. You've been able to get some good innings as well out of Hunter Harvey. Kyle Finnegan is always a little bit of a roll of the dice in the bullpen, but not too shabby. And for the Astros, I do think that they are paying for losing some of that depth that they've had in the bullpen in past years. Guys like Ryan Stanek, Hector Neris weren't household names, but they were able to do a nice job holding down the fort. Now you've got Josh Hader and Ryan Presley, and both of these guys have really struggled to begin the season, but backing them up are the likes of guys like Taylor Scott, Sean Dubin and company, and they're just not the same guys. But what I will say for the Astros is that the lineup itself, especially at the top, it has been very rock solid Jose Altuve, Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez. All these guys have been able to supply 5-plus home runs. They're all giving you north of a 375 on base, so you've been able to get great production there. Alex Bregman, having an Alex Bregman start, he's got as many home runs as myself, but Jeremy Pena, hitting about a 355 has been tremendous. And really, other than Jose Abreu, who's just been a big, giant waste of money for the Houston Astros, all these guys have been able to do a relatively solid job. I do think that they're going to be able to get to young Mitchell Parker. He, at the minor league level, wasn't great, wasn't terrible. Goes out in his first start, and he was the first Washington National to get a win in his debut, and this is the pitcher being credited with the win, not just the team won in general, but he actually got a win in regards to a decision, said Steven Strasburg. So it had been quite a while. He went out there, he threw a relatively solid game. He's not necessarily some sort of a strikeout artist or anything like that early on in his career. Last season at the minor league level was getting about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, but he's a little bit all over the place. He was giving out about 4.5 walks per 9 innings. I do think that having to go up against the Houston Astros after he was able to tame the Dodgers last time around, I don't think that's going to be as successful for him. So I do like the Astros on the run line, willing to lay up to about a minus 125 there, and did something total at a 9.4. So here at the 9, I'd like the over to go along that run line. 923, 924 on the betting board. The Cincinnati Reds, yes, we are into Cincinnati. They play out the LA Angels, as you've got Jose Soriano on the bump for the Angels, and Frankie Montas is on the bump for Cincinnati. Cincinnati between minus 128 to minus 135 favorites. They're between plus 114 to plus 121 is that number on the Angels. 9.5 is the total, over and under both at minus 110. And I set the Reds at a minus 151. I'm going to be willing to roll with them on the money line. Was a little bit of a perplexing decision for the LA Angels to side on Jose Soriano to become a starter for them. Really wasn't even giving them a lot of starts when he was over at the minor league level. Now, coming off of a nice outing last time out against the Tampa Bay Rays, gives up one run in five innings, but that came with five walks as well. So I do have a little bit of question mark there for Soriano. The swing and miss stuff is very good throughout his career at the MLB level. This is going back to last year, 71 punchouts in 57 innings, but he's also giving up north of five walks per nine innings, so you have to wonder how long he's going to be able to go in a game. And for the LA Angels, they just got a lot of old bullpen pieces in general that I don't think are going to pan out. Like, they're looking to kick the tires right now. Carson Fulmer, Jose Cicerano, Hunter Strickland, Adam Simber. They might as well open up the AAP cards for them. It's not been great, to say the least. Matt Moore, along Carlos Acevas in the 8th and 9th inning are solid, but getting the ball to them, that's a big giant question mark, and the LA Angels have a very, very top-heavy lineup. You've got Taylor Ward and Mike Trout, who have been amazing. Trout has 8 bombs. He's only providing about a 337 on base down for him, but 8 home runs. You'll take that all day long. Taylor Ward, he's hitting about a 290, 6 home runs. The rest of the team, I believe, has a grand total of 7 home runs, and 2 of them are from Logan Ohapi, who's been great. He's been able to give you a 362 on base, but we've got guys like Aaron Nix, Mickey Moniak, Nate Chenal, Brandon Drury, Zach Neto, all these guys in a 225 or lower, and that's not great to say the least. So it's been a lot of solo home runs for these gentlemen. Meanwhile, for the Cincinnati Reds, Ellie De La Cruz, it does look like it's coming into his own. He's up to 6 home runs. He's been making the routine play a little bit more. We all know that he's able to be amazing. Is he able to go out there, be consistent day in and day out? It looks like he's starting to turn the corner for that. 395 on base, that is a big indicator for me on that. Jake Fraley has been able to give you north of 4 on base. You've been able to get good production as well. Spencer's here, hitting above a 303 bombs. Now, you've had a couple struggling bats in their lineup as well. Jonathan India, Will Benson, Jameer Candelario, Christian Encarnacion, Strand, all in below at 225, not necessarily providing a ton of power, but certainly do like Frankie Montas much more than I do like Jose Soriano in this ordeal, as I do think that Montas is just going to be able to lend a little bit more length in general. For Montas, coming off of pretty much not pitching last season, and last few seasons in general, it's been a little bit rough, and he had to just try to reinvent himself after leaving Oakland, because Oakland is such a good pitcher's ballpark. When you leave Oakland, you really do take a little bit of a dive, but right now for Frankie Montas, not necessarily getting the swings and misses that he did early on during his career, about 7 punch outs per 9 innings, but has been able to mitigate things a little bit more. He does have a fielding independent that is north of 5 because his swing and miss stuff has been down, and he is still giving up quite a few walks. He's been giving up about 4.3 walks per 9 innings thus far this season, which is not necessarily ideal out there in Cincinnati, but he's actually had quite a bit of success at home. It's been really his road starts, more specifically that Seattle Mariners start where he gave up 5 runs and went 2 innings, and which was a big issue for him. I do think that he's going to be able to get back online against recent Angels team that, yeah, you've got a couple nice star hitters, but at the same time, the consistency just not there with this unit. So it is a circumstance where I did set my total to 9.3. I do think that with the just top heaviness of both of these lineups, it is going to cause for a little bit of an under. Even if you do get a few home runs, I think that they're going to be of the solo variety. So looking at the under, and I do like the Reds on the money line, set them more around a minus 151. Don't really want to go on the run line here with them, as you do have a Cincinnati Reds bullpen that has been halfway decent. Not great, not terrible. I like Alexis Diaz as a closer. Fernando Cruz has been halfway decent as well. I remember two seasons ago, he had a sub-175 ERA coming out of the bullpen. If you do take a look at the bullpen ERA of the Cincinnati Reds thus far, it's been hovering right in that neighborhood of about 20th thus far. So not great, not terrible. Would rather stick with the money line rather than the run line to go along with that under. 925, 926 going to be in conjecture with 931, 932. See Seattle Mariners on the road facing off against the Colorado Rockies. Game number one is going to feature Gal Quantrill for the Rockies and George Kirby on the bump for Seattle. Meanwhile, Emerson Hancock is going to be going in game number two for Seattle. Peter Lambert goes for Colorado, so we'll stick with game one first. This is the Kirby versus Quantrill game, and total on this game is 10.5, over and under both at minus 110. Between minus 185 to minus 192 is that number on Seattle, plus 160 to plus 170, that number on the Colorado Rockies. And if you're looking to lay a run and a half with Seattle, you're going to be laying between minus 120 to minus 125, and it's a little bit of an interesting circumstance. If we could just get up about two more pennies at a plus 172, I would be willing to rock with the Rockies on the money line. I was only willing to go up to about a minus 115 in terms of laying a run and a half with the Seattle Mariners. So right now we're waiting to see if we could get those extra like two or so pennies. And hey, if we do get to more around about a plus 115, plus 120 or so in getting a run and a half with the Colorado Rockies, that's something I'd be willing to entertain as well. But right now, most likely looking at a Rockies run line play, because for George Kirby, he does an amazing job with this command. He's not going to walk anyone, but I don't think that that plays very well at Coors Field, because Coors Field is like playing on the moon, and for George Kirby, he's been getting lit up quite a bit. He's got an ERA that is north of 6, despite the fact that he hasn't necessarily given up a lot of hard contact. He's only given up 2 home runs in 20 and a third innings, but because he's always in the zone, he's always giving up contact. The ball is always in play, and that's not necessarily the world's greatest thing. You've got the same thing with Cal Quantrill, though. Cal Quantrill, 5.57 ERA. He is a textbook pitch contact guy. He has been getting about 4.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's given up about 3 walks per 9 as well, but once he starts giving up a combined 4 runs in 12 innings against the Phillies and the Arizona Diamondbacks, with the Diamondbacks start coming at home, that's actually not too bad. And you got a Colorado Rockies team that they always do a better job of hitting at home rather than away from home. You may recall last season they were averaging about 3.65 runs per game away from home, more like 5.35 runs per game at home, hitting about 40 points higher as a collective when they were at home. Now you do have a few guys like Nolan Jones, Elierius Montero, you're able to throw in there. When he's out there, Chris Bryant, as he's back injured once again, Alan Trejo, these are guys hitting at 225 or lower, but Ryan McMahon is hitting above a 300 along with Elias Diaz. You've been able to get some relatively good production as well out of Ezekiel Tovar, 3+ home runs. He's been able to give you about a 350 on base. And for Seattle, they were able to have a nice outburst yesterday, but this team just frankly has not been able to hit. They're in the bottom 7 in the big leagues with regards to their both batting average along with their overall power numbers. You've had Josh Rojas hit well above 300. Mitch Haniger has done a nice job being able to move the line along with Ty France as well. These are three guys that you're able to rely upon, but those were the only three guys in the starting lineup yesterday that entered in the game that were hitting above about a 225. Like, it's been really rough. Ori Polanco, along J.P. Crawford, Mitch Garver, they're all hitting below a 200. You've had Julio Rodriguez start to move the line a little bit more, but haven't been able to get any power out of him whatsoever. Now, what I will say for the Seattle Mariners is that they've got a massive advantage in the bullpen as well. You've got the likes of a Trent Thornton, Taylor Cicado, Gabe Spier have all been really nice reclamation projects. Brett DeGuise is a guy that they're looking to remake, and I do think that they're going to be able to do that. And for the Rockies, this is once again a bottom five bullpen out there in the big league. So Victor Vodnik has actually been very good for the team, but you've got the likes of Justin Lawrence, Tyler Kinley, Anthony Molina, who are providing north of a 5 ERA. Jake Bird, he's not necessarily a guy that elicits confidence. So in terms of the money line, I did set this more around a minus 172. So if we could get like two more pennies, we'd be willing to take a shot on the Rockies on the money line. That's right now what I'm targeting on this one. And I'm going to be taking a look at the over in this spot as well. I did set my total at 11.4. And then in Hancock versus Peter Lambert, 931, 932 on the card. Only Circa has a number up for this one. Seattle's a minus 143 favorite, plus 131 is the number on Colorado. Totals 11 over and under, both at minus 110. If you're looking to lay a run half, you're able to get a plus 105. I was willing to lay up to a minus 105, so I'll be taking a shot on Hancock. With Hancock, he is much like George Kirby, only without the swings and misses. He's only been able to get about 6 punch outs per 9 innings throughout his career, but he only gives up about 2 walks per 9 innings as well. And I just have never been able to get with Peter Lambert. He always tries to remake himself at the minor league level, and he will give you like a false sense of hope. He'll have like 2 really, really good starts for the Colorado Rockies, and then he just lays a turd. I mean, it's just uncanny as to what happens with this. As for Peter Lambert, he throughout his career just has well north of a 5 ERA, and the guy gets barreled up. I wish I could put it any other way, but for Peter Lambert throughout his career, he's just never been able to put it together. He's been pitching actually more in the bullpen thus far this season, and it's not worked out bad for him. He's been a little bit of a long guy, 11 and 2/3 innings, has only given up 1 home run. Perhaps this is a little bit more of where he needs to find his footing, because they gave him a few starts a season ago, 5.36 ERA, much of the old, same old, same old for him. He was giving up right around about 3 walks per 9 innings. His strikeouts per 9 rate, that was below 7.5 as well, so very much less than savory on that front. And with him just not being backed up by a great bullpen, with the Colorado Rockies having the offense that they do, I do think that this is going to be another high-scoring affair. And this is a case where I do think that both of these bullpens are going to be very much all hands on deck, to say the least. So it's a circumstance where I did set my total 11.7 here at the 11. I like the over. And with the Mariners, we'll be willing to take that plus 105 run line with Hancock. So looking at the Rockies at a plus 172 or higher with Quantrill on the money line in game 1, I like both of these games over. But in game 2, one to side with the Mariners on the run line. 927, 928 on the betting board. The Toronto Blue Jays at the road. They're facing off against the Slam Diego Padres. As Joe Musgrove goes for the Padres, and Chris Bassett has the hook, line, and sinker for Toronto. Toronto is a underdog of anywhere to plus 110 to plus 117. Meanwhile, in between minus 123 to minus 130, that is your number on San Diego. 8 is the total. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the over. I set my total at 8.3. Chris Bassett, just not the same pitcher when he's away from home rather than what he is at home. Ever since he joined the Toronto Blue Jays, he has been very rock solid when he's been in Toronto. A sub 275 ERA. His command is so much better when he's at home as well. When he hits the road, he just gets hit up so hard. He's got an ERA that's nearly 2 points higher when he's away from home rather than when he is at home. And his 2 starts away from home thus far this season. 9 and a third innings, he's allowed 9 runs, 8 of which were earned. So, not so tremendous. The swing and miss stuff is down when he's on the road. I don't know. It's just literally everything for Chris Bassett is worse for him when he's away from home. It's almost undescribable, even his command. So, that's been an issue. Meanwhile, for Joe Musgrove, it has been a less than savory start to the season for him. 3-plus runs surrendered in 4 of his first 5 starts of the season. His strikeout numbers are down. 20 punch-outs and 24 and a third innings. The velocity, I haven't noticed a massive dip, but it does feel like it's down just a touch. And it's not like either of these guys are backed up by bullpens that have been lighting the world on fire. You've got for the San Diego Padres a few guys I like. I like the fact that they bring in Angel De Los Santos along with Juanny Peralta, but they did not necessarily get the start that they were hoping for yesterday out of Randy Vasquez. So that means that you've got a little bit of a tax bullpen. You're probably going to be looking to guys like Stephen Kolick and company to try to hold down the fort. Meanwhile, for the Toronto Blue Jays, they did get reinforcements back with Jordan Romano along with Eric Swanson, too. Very big bullpen pieces. They were on the injured list to begin the season. They've come back, but where in the world is Tim Mesa gone? Last year, he was tremendous with a .152 ERA. He's currently got 1 north of 8 thus far this season. Genesis Cabrera has been an issue for the Blue Jays in general. They're a bottom 6 team in the big leagues with regards to their bullpen ERA, and for the Blue Jays, they've been able to put bat to ball thus far in the series, which you do like to see, but all in all, it's still very much a struggling lineup to begin the season, as you still have George Springer along with Alejandro Kerr, Kevin Kiermaier hitting at .225 or lower, Vlad Guerrero Jr. still providing about a .362 on base, but he's had a tough time with regards to his average as well. He and Bo Bichette have not necessarily been able to provide what you're expecting them to. It's been all about Justin Turner. Justin Turner providing north of 4 on base, pair of home runs for him thus far this season, but for the San Diego Padres, I do think that they're going to find a way to be able to get to Bassett with them having both Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. still in the fold. Tatis Jr., 4-plus home runs, about a .370 on base. Manny Machado has been able to go deep 4 times. Not a hitting for the world's greatest, average about .255. And Xander Bogaerts, he at the leadoff spot is hitting below the Mendoza line of a .200, but Luis Campusano coming in at the catcher spot, being able to give you north of a .250 average has been big. Jackson Merrill has been able to hit above a .300. Hassan Kim has been struggling a little bit at the plate, but he's good with the glove. He's still giving you about a .340 on base. I do think that the Padres are going to be able to have Joe Musgrove feel a little bit more at home with them actually being at home, as a lot of his struggles have come on the road in recent years as well. So it is a circumstance where I do like the Padres on the money line in this ordeal, set them at a minus 154, and they make my total at 8.3. I just want absolutely no part of Chris Bassett on the road. So looking at the Padres money line and taking a look at this total over, and we wrap things up with 929, 930 on the betting board. The Walker Texas Rangers hit the road to face off against the Atlanta Braves. Darius Vines is on the bump for Atlanta, and Michael Lorenzen goes for Texas. Texas is back to being an underdog of between plus 136 to plus 145. Meanwhile, between minus 151, minus 162 is your number on Atlanta. Done is the total. The under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. I'm going to be taking a look at the under. I did set my total at a 9.8. And with regards to the Atlanta Braves, made them a minus 142 favorite. Now that we're seeing a plus 145 pop up, I'm going to be taking a look at Texas on the money line. Now for Michael Lorenzen, do have some trepidations with him. He has not been a great swing and miss guy ever since coming into a starter's role. Out of the bullpen, he was not great, but he was okay at being able to get a few punch outs. But as a starter, that's been a little bit of an issue. The command, it's been getting better as he's been able to go along as a starter. He had a nice first start out there for the Texas Rangers, comes off the injured list, and he is able to deliver 5 scoreless innings. That was against the Detroit Tigers, and that came with 5 walks, so I'll take that with a little bit more of a grain of salt, but hey, he was able to keep them off the board, so that's something that you do look for. And for Darius Vines, small sample size for him as well, wasn't necessarily the cleanest of performances, giving up 4 hits, 3 walks, and less than 5 innings against the Houston Astros, but again, gave up just 1 run. I do think that both of these guys can give you 5 okay innings, and then turn it over to bullpen set. For the Atlanta Braves, they've got a little bit of an edge here, but it's a case where I do think that both of these at the end of the day are going to be not great, not terrible. The Braves entered into Saturday, 10th of the league in terms of bullpen ERA. Rangers more on 22nd, but Kirby Yates along David Robertson coming in to hold down the fort is big for them. I like Jordan Lyons in that bullpen as well, and then for the Braves, it's been all about A.J. Minter having a nice season for this team. Now, Tyler Madzik, him since coming off the injured list, just has not been himself. This is not the guy that we saw a few seasons ago when the Braves were able to win the World Series, but Rossy Iglesias is still nasty. Joey Menez has been rock solid, and for the Atlanta Braves, currently they're in a bit of better form with their offense, mainly because Marcell Ozuna has been able to supply 8 home runs while hitting a .350. That'll help, and then you got Orlando Arcia, Ozzy Albies hitting above a .300 as well, but all in all, you just have 1 through 9 all being very, very solid. Jared Kelnick has been able to give you north of a 4 on base as well, but it does feel like Texas is going to be able to come into their own sooner rather than later. And keep in mind with Texas, even though they were such a good offense a season ago, they were like a bottom 5 team in the American League in terms of home runs per game away from home. Now, they were leading the American League in home runs per game at home, but on the road, they didn't necessarily supply as much boom, but just had a lot of guys in general that found a way to be able to get on base, much like thus far this season. You got Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, along with Josh Smith, who have all been able to hit at least a .280 for this team. Really, Adolis Garcia is the lone guy that's been able to give you north of 3 home runs thus far this season. You're going to need to get a little bit more towards the bottom of the fold. Wyatt Langford, .315 on base, just still has not been able to get that first home run. Leody Taveras, Travis Jankowski, I'm not necessarily been able to provide a ton, but I do think that's going to come for them sooner rather than later. And for Darius Vines, him being in prime time in Sunday Night Baseball in this sort of spot, I do think that's going to get to him just a little bit. So I did set my total at 9.8. I do think that both bullpens do just enough to be able to keep this total under, so I do like the under, but being able to get north of a plus 143, going to be looking at the Rangers on the money line. That'll wrap things up for the Sunday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /X Timeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters DM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And a big thanks once again to Tanner Kern of DraftKings for joining me in the last segment. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.